This is a recording of Dr. Tom Roszell for Sunday, January 22nd, 2017. You can listen to this program live every Sunday afternoon from 12 noon to 1 p.m. right here on 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
The following program is paid for by its sponsors, who are solely responsible for its content. Views expressed on this program are not the views of 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
The information provided on Dr. Tom Roszell Live by Dr. Tom Roszell, D.C., interview guests, show co-hosts, or substitute hosts is not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. It is for general information purposes only. Information from this broadcast should not replace the appropriate consultation and examination process by a licensed physician. Always consult your own physician prior to changing any current medical directive or prescription.
Dr. Tom Roszell Live, right now. On 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Welcome to Dr. Tom Roszell Live. This is Dr. Tom Roszell Live in studio, waiting to take your phone calls on anything you want to know about your health. You know, perhaps you've had a problem, you've tried, you've applied, you've done all kinds of things, and guess what? Doesn't work. Well, here's an opportunity. Let's check it out. Let's see what we can do for you. Call 888-630-9625. That's 888-630-9625. We're in studio today in, you know, kind of a gloomy day in Washington. The weather has not been very supportive. We have tornadoes all over the place and, you know, snow in California and so forth and so on. But nevertheless, sun shines here within us because we're going to give you information that can really affect your health overall. And it's a condition that we have a tendency to isolate, or conditions, if you will, that we kind of compartmentalize, thinking that they're only localized to that area and they don't have an effect. Well, the truth of it is they affect everything, from pain all over your body, your hip, your knee, and it gives you headaches. It can give you health problems. It can cause just misery in your life. What are we talking about? We're talking about foot and ankle problems, foot and ankle conditions. And in studio, to help me get through the weeds on this thing, will be your host, your presenter, this Wednesday evening at the Roszell Center, is Dr. Harlan Browning. Good morning, my friend, or afternoon.
Good morning to you, Tom. Always a pleasure to be here with you.
Oh, buddy. Well, listen, we're going to talk about a problem that you have a tremendous insight with, and it's not a problem, it's problems. You know, it's just that we see people, you know, they're always, they're in pain, they're hurting, they're trying to figure out. We have, you know, the diabetic neuropathy that affects the foot, but there's so much more than that. I mean, we can get into things, you know, from everything from gout, you know, to rheumatoid arthritis, and we can talk about osteoarthritis, degenerative diseases. We can, you know, just plain old my feet hurt. And then we can follow it up. You know, the old song, you know, the ankle bone's connected to the knee bone, connected to the hip bone, connected. Well, that's, in this particular situation, it's true. It manifests in so many different ways. Let's get into it a little bit. And, you know, this conundrum called, you know, ankle and foot problems, you see a whole lot of it.
Yeah, we definitely see a ton of that. And I think it's important to look at it as maybe a primary issue where the person is actually damage their foot, or it can be a compensatory issue. A lot of the people that I see with long-standing foot problems get them because the way their posture is developed over time. So it's not really the foot that has the issue; it's the foot that's taking the brunt of the compensation in the body.
So we have, you know, when we look at the foot, it's like the hand. We have a lot of different bones, and we have the long bones of the leg going all the way through. And mechanically, this is not an isolated structure. This is something that, if something happens to the foot, it can affect all the way up. But conversely, that foot, that lower leg, has nerves from the back. It has acupuncture circuits and so forth that are affected from other areas as well. Let's talk about something really simple, you know, kind of get everybody's attention on this. You know, a patient walks in and, you know, they tell you that their feet have been killing them. You know, they have a hard time walking anymore. And you see a patient has got a flat foot and they've got a bunion on one side. And, you know, they may have had some orthotics, or they went down to the drugstore and they bought themselves a pair of inexpensive orthotics and they throw them in. But nevertheless, they're still hurting. How do you begin to unfold? And I'm going to get into very specific areas with you later on, but how do you begin to unfold and unravel the why behind this thing? What are you looking for? What do you need to know? What's the evaluation process?
Well, first and foremost, the foot's a pretty complex part of the body. There's 26 bones, 33 joints, and over 100 different muscles, tendons, and ligaments. So there is a lot going on there. The foot has several roles. One is to propel us when we walk, and also to hold us up against gravity. So if we don't do those things in accordance to the way the body demands, then we will often see the foot itself start to break down.
What are the triggering mechanisms? Why does somebody lose the capacity to walk comfortably, or suddenly they see their ankles are swollen, or they can't even touch them, they can't put pressure, the ankles begin to swell?
I think one of the main reasons is poor fitting shoes, high heels. We often forego function for fashion, and that can be a bad thing, because over time the foot's going to adapt to it. Specifically, ladies' shoes are very narrow in the toe box. That's the front part of the shoe. So if we funnel all the toes in over time, then everything is going to shrink down in accordance to tendons are going to get tighter, ligaments, and then we're going to start to develop telltale signs like bunions and dropped metatarsals and things like that.
Well, there's an old axiom in our field that as long as the shoe manufacturers continue to make those kind of shoes you're just talking about for women, we'll continue to donate to the retirement funds because we're going to be in business.
Right. And then obviously you deal with the elevation in the heel as well. So when we have an elevated heel, then the back part of your leg, the gastroxoleus muscle, the calf muscle will shorten over time. And that's really counterproductive to the way we should be.
And it jams everything all the way up.
Without a doubt.
You think about it, because women get on heels, even guys today, they're wearing shoes that are not fitting well. It forces their body forward. You can't walk around kind of, bend over at an angle. So you're forcing yourself back up and you're jamming all the spinal areas, the disc spaces. You're causing the cantilever effect, if you will, the pressure within the pelvis that's held by the legs. You're forcing that forward. Now you've got irritation that's taking place within the joint cavity of the hip. And we see all these things that and so a patient walks in, or somebody that's even an athlete, they have bad fitting shoes. They're not taking care of their body the way they're supposed to. So we have mechanical disruption that occurs over a period of time, and truly people wear shoes that are awful, or they wear them to the point where they no longer have any support mechanism whatsoever. How about the patient comes in and tells you, my feet are throbbing, they hurt all the time, my ankles are swollen. How do you distinguish that? Is that a mechanical problem or is that a biochemical problem?
It could be a mechanical problem that's causing chronic inflammation. So if in that case, I would suspect the person would probably have very flat feet. In other words, be very pronated. But you certainly can find people that have metabolic conditions, like you referenced before, the diabetes. You can have inflammatory type situations that'll cause that. Cardiovascular, that's a big one. As we get older and we can't reclaim proteins and through the bloodstream, then fluids are going to follow those proteins that start to leak out, and then we get what's called pitting edema. So for folks that come home at night, they take their socks off and they can see where the elastic band is.
Tight around
the
ankles.
Yeah, it's tight. And if it's actually depressing in there, that's called pitting edema, and that's often an indication that the cardiovascular system is becoming sluggish, and over time it can be more complicated than that.
It can be dangerous. Yeah. It can lead to cardiac failure.
Sure.
And, also lymphatic channel damage as well.
Sure.
And there's a lot of things. You see people that they're kind of rounded chest and shoulders are slooping forward. The return mechanism for the lymphatic system is at the shoulders, and everything moves up towards that, down the arms to the shoulders, from the lower body to the shoulders, from the head down to the shoulders. And if we have compression or irritation and narrowing of that thoracic outlet, if you will, that shoulder area, then we're not going to drain the fluid, and the ankles are going to be one of the first places that we're going to see swelling over a period of time. How about the person that comes in and they talk about that big toe is throbbing? It hurts. And if they don't wear shoes, it's not as bad, but you start seeing the bunion form. But if they put shoes on, then that bunion gets red, it gets irritated, it hurts. And, they take their shoes off and it takes a little bit of time for it to settle down so they can tolerate it.
Well, anytime you're dealing with a big toe problem like you're describing, it very well could be mechanical, a bunion. We call it hallux valgus. In other words, the toe is being pushed inwards. We can't forget about gout. gout is on the rise. If it wasn't on the rise, we wouldn't see commercials on TV advertising medication for gout. If there wasn't a market for it, it wouldn't be on TV. So I see it more and more. I see a lot of what we call subclinical gout, which where a person has elevated uric acid, doesn't really have the classic gout symptoms, the big swollen toe or those types of things. But that's the folks that have kind of global transient pains that, that come and go depending on their diet.
You know, that's one of the reasons I bring it up, because so many people will say that my foot hurts. And they go, and again, as you said, a subclinical presentation, the uric acid is maybe borderline, but they don't catch them in the flare. You know, they go after the flare is over. That's because of the foods that they're eating and so forth, and they can't process it. And, you know, I'll look at the patient. I said, you know, this is gout. And he said, how can it be gout? So we begin to explain, you know, the process. The big toe, interestingly, and if you look up gout in traditional medical textbooks, they're going to say, well, it happens commonly in the toe, ankle, then the knee. It can happen in other joints as well. It can be systemic and go into the shoulders. But gout is the reason that it happens in the big toe, and gout is a liver metabolism problem, is in Chinese medicine, the acupuncture system, the channel for the liver starts in the big toe. And so the Chinese will tell you it's stagnant energy. It's not moving. It's caught there. So you have all this nonsense and these crystals and so forth end up in, and it's painful and it's ugly, and it mechanically it alters everything.
Yeah, and certainly over time, you can get gouty arthritis, which means that the joint is actually degenerating because the gout is it's causing inflammation. Then it heals, inflammation it heals, and then it breaks down. And you can see it on X-ray. So we certainly don't like to see that.
I mean, you've talked about, you know, we've touched upon the gout, we've touched upon osteoarthritis, we've touched upon, I mentioned rheumatoid and so forth, and degenerative osteoarthritis and so forth. These things become significant, and they can become worse with an inflammatory reaction. And then there are people who simply, as you talked about it earlier when we first started the program, is that it, mechanically they're not being supported properly. How do you distinguish between the two of them? Patient comes in, how do you know it's not a metabolic problem and it's only mechanical, and we're going to get into the fix in the second half of the program?
Well, I mean, certainly the history of the problem, when did it start, you know, provocative factors, alleviating factors, you know, what helps the issue, family history helps you understand that. A thorough physical exam, you need to look at the foot or the big toe. X-rays can be very helpful if it's an older person, you're considering there to be some degenerative things. Watching the person stand and watching the person's walk, that's the gold standard for me. Do we see changes outside of what we would consider to be the normal biomechanics? And we can take it even one step further. We have a machine in the office that actually has the ability to measure the amount of force when you walk, so we can quantify how far you've moved from normal. So you put all those things together and you have a pretty good understanding. Do we have a primary foot problem? Is it secondary to something else? Or is there some sort of metabolic consideration that hasn't been found out?
So mechanically, quickly, before we have to come up to the break, if it shows up as a mechanical problem, how much of it is localized as a primary, even in percentages, how much it is secondary to other structures, whether it's the low back, the pelvis, and so forth? You know, how do you weed out that differential?
You know, I don't know if I could put a percentage on it, but I can tell you this. If when you look at the person's posture, you see the actual position of the leg being rotated outwards or inwards, you can be pretty sure that the low back, pelvis, and hip are becoming very much involved in the whole situation. So I look at the foot as its ability to hold us upright and certainly have us be able to walk. The foot is unique, and when the foot's not touching the ground, it's mobile, but when it hits the ground, it locks and it's very rigid.
We're going to talk a little bit more about that mechanical stair step as soon as we come back. My guest in studio, your presenter and your host this Wednesday evening, the 25th. Of this month. It's almost over. My God, we're getting through already. Dr. Harlan Browning, love to have you as a guest. Call 703-698-7117, 703-698-7117. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Tom Rozell here. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozell live in studio. Call 888-630-9625. 888-630-9625. Love to talk to you on anything that's going on with your health and see if we can put you in a different direction, because I'm sure that, you know, the inability to resolve something is frustrating, but we might be able to put you in a direction that you haven't thought about. In studio, my guest, your presenter this Wednesday evening, Dr. Harlan Browning. We're talking about ankle and foot problems, but they're not isolated to just the ankle and foot. They come from many other places. It can be a metabolic condition. We talked and touched briefly upon, you know, things like gout and degenerative disease and rheumatoid conditions and diabetic neuropathies and so forth. And they all can be dealt with specifically, but nevertheless, you have to understand what the mechanism is. Dr. Browning, welcome again. Let's go through the mechanics. We're talking a little bit about things happening from above down. And, excuse me, when the mechanism of the low back and the pelvis are not working properly, and then they begin to manifest into the foot. And you said when, you know, somebody walks and their foot is either turned out, everted, you look at the pelvis, or it's inverted as well. And so it tells you that mechanically things are disrupted. So how do you begin to determine, as we both know, it can happen to the muscles of the foot as well. They're weak. They're not supportive. Or it can be hip rotators or low back as well. But nevertheless, for the patient, it's localized to the foot. My foot, my ankle is killing me. What do I do about it?
Well, you certainly want to look at the foot itself, test those muscles, make sure that they're all firing. The classic pattern is the foot's muscles that are on the outside, the pronei group, are almost always weak. And the ones on the inside are usually a little bit stronger. So it has a tendency to have us in an off balance position to begin with. The calf is a big, strong muscle. And what do we do at the gym? We do things to strengthen it even more when we should, in fact, spend more time stretching it. And don't forget about the muscles of the hip and the pelvis. If we have weakness there, then we're going to compensate by having the leg either turn out or in. So we need to look at the balance between the upper part of the body and the lower part of the body, and think of the foot as somewhere in between, actually.
You know, it's important to understand the mechanisms, at least, you know, from my perspective when we deal with patients in the office, because every muscle in the body has a nerve root that goes to it, has an acupuncture system that helps energize it. We can use those, but it also has ligamentous support. It has these tight wrappers of fascia that cross over many bones and sometimes muscle patterns to hold them in place. A lot of people end up with flattening of the arch or flat foot, where they have no integrity because they jumped off of something. An athlete is pushing too hard their foot, and you bring them in and you find that the muscles are firing, but as soon as you put them on their feet, you lose the entire mechanical integrity of that foot, that propulsion. And it's due to the lack of integrity, if you will, of the fascia. How does that happen?
Well, if over time the fascia becomes restricted, or we develop adhesions in it from repetitive injuries, or, you know, maybe just not being active enough, that the fascia is going to tighten over time, that's going to compromise the ability for all the joints in the foot to move. Now, if one joint in the foot becomes fixated or locked, then guess what happens? The other joints will compensate for that. And as a result, the ligaments that stabilize those other joints will actually become stretched over time. So we see the flat-footed person become more flat-footed, if you will, as time goes by.
It's, you know, it's so incredibly important to really be able to differentiate the underlying cause of the problems. You talked, you know, a lot about the calf being too tight, people getting in the gym, and, you know, they, instead of stretching the calf out and the quad and the butt and the muscles that are in synergy, if you will, to that, we have a tendency to tighten them. And so, you know, it's a chain that kind of self-feeding, and it perpetuates its own problematic situation. But here we are, we're trying to distinguish between metabolic conditions and, you know, those things that are mechanically irritating. But for the most of us, what we see is patients' failure to be functional and mobile. And they're wearing things that are deleterious, meaning, as you said, the toe box is too narrow and for some people. Or they also have arches that are not appropriate. They put an arch into something that shouldn't be there. We have a colleague in the International College of Applied Kinesiology that says everybody should be barefooted all the time. And so where's the in-between between that? Should people be barefooted and that's the way they should walk around the house? Or do they need support when they're, you know, they're not dressed up and going someplace?
You know, and I think an argument can be made for being barefoot as well as it can be made for wearing shoes. My personal opinion is this. If we're put in shoes, you know, as a child at 1 year old, like little booties, and we wear them throughout the course of our life, there's an adaptation that takes place. Okay. It's like putting a brace on something. As that takes place, then the structures are going to accommodate to it. The heart structures, like the ligaments and the muscles, are going to shorten or tighten accordingly. And then more importantly, the nervous system is going to adapt to that. So you'll hear people talk about the benefits of barefoot running. Well, I agree that there's some benefits for folks that have not been in shoes for the majority of their life. Now, for people like me, if I ran barefoot after about a quarter mile, I would be hating it.
I know. I could do it in the sand, but that's about it. But, you know, you get out and your foot is designed to be self-propulsion and designed to get all kinds of sensory input. But nevertheless, we're going to talk more about that. We have some of your calls coming in, 888-630-9625. Give us a call. This Wednesday evening, Dr. Harlan Browning will be your host, your presenter at the Rozelle Center. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Dr. Tom Rozelle Live continues now on 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Tom Rozelle here. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live in studio. Call me, 888-630-9625. That's 888-630-9625. My guest, your host this Wednesday evening, Dr. Harlan Browning. We're talking about ankle and foot problems and their manifestation to other problems, whether it's the knee, the hip, migraine headaches, low back pain, doesn't make any difference. It starts with the base, the foundation, your feet. And we have to remember that they're connected to a lot of different things. And, you know, we have to weed out whether it's a metabolic problem, you know, things like rheumatoid and gout and degenerative disease that's inflammatory in nature and so forth, or it has to do with something that's just mechanically disruptive that you've messed up over a period of time. Having said that, let's get to some of your calls at 888-630-9625. Alan, thank you for holding on. How can I help you?
Yeah, I'm concerned about advances in Parkinson's disease.
Yeah, Parkinson's.
You
have Parkinson's disease?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And what would you like to know?
17 years. Stem cells, research, and antioxidants, the whole gamut, if you will.
All right, what I'll do is I'll get into it a little bit with you. Obviously, you know, you have just, you know, auditorily a lot of the symptoms of Parkinson's, where the speech is slower in cadence and so forth and more hesitant. That's very typical of that condition. Parkinson's disease manifests itself in many different ways. And, you know, when the symptoms become straight up, you have the trembling, you have rigidity in the body, the slowness of movement within the system, the posture is not able to be supported properly. And then you go into other things from, you know, tiredness and voice changes as you're showing, and difficulty sleeping, digestive functions, and it goes on. The point of it is that this is a problem that is one that is a result of brain degeneration and the loss of a neurotransmitter called dopamine, and the neurological damage comes from inflammatory reactions within the system. The brain begins to deteriorate, and you know, you end up with all these things. Now, I'm going to touch on some things. This is a problem that Dr. Bonnie and I probably could sit here and talk about all day long, but I'm going to give you some quick what can you do about it. There's things in a Parkinson's patient, as in many degenerative brain conditions, you want to eliminate grains completely, in my opinion. No grains whatsoever. You want to make sure that you get some raw foods, raw fruits, raw vegetables, but you can juice them and leave the pulp in. You never want to take the pulp out because there's way too many antioxidants within the pulp, and you want to have that, and also maintains fiber, and that's where you have to have that. Constipation is very common with a Parkinson's patient. The really good fats, things like avocados and coconut and even old-fashioned good free-range organic butter straight up, and sprouted nuts and seeds and, you know, things of that nature, flax oils, cold-pressed olive oils, vitamin E's. Those things are great. The omega-3 fatty acids are really important at very high levels, and so is DHA. Green teas, because they have such high levels of polyphenols, helps fight the damage of free radical formation and also elevates dopamine in the brain, believe it or not. It actually will, you know, if you have any neurological problem and you start drinking three large cups of green tea every day, you'll find that there's a huge shift in mitigation in how the brain functions and works, you know, providing that you're not doing other things to, you know, to damage it. So you got your finger in the dike, but the dam is still filling up. You've got to get rid of, you know, all the processed foods, the artificial sweeteners, but, you know, more importantly, give our office a call. Dr. Browning has a specialty in neurology and neurological pathways between him and our acupuncture department and our functional nutrition department, functional medical nutrition department. We see a lot of people get a tremendous amount of help in these areas. But, you know, just kind of cap, you know, you want to make sure that you're getting things that are high in your omega-3s, and we talked about them, medium-chain triglycerides like coconut oil, your raw fruits and vegetables, cold-pressed olive oils and things of that nature. So, but a lot can be done, Alan, and if we can help you, you know, come in, see Dr. Brown. As a matter of fact, this Wednesday evening would be a great time to come in, not only to listen to this condition and ankle and foot pain, but also ask Dr. Brown what you'd like to on any other condition. 888-630-9625. That's 888-630-9625. That's the number here at the studio. And our number at Roselle Center for Healing is 703-698-7117. 703-698-7117. Register for Dr. Browning's class. And I promise you, those of you who heard the professor over the years know that Dr. Browning is above the cut when it comes to tons of information and extremely capable in putting out the fire in so many different things, this being one that he has a tremendous insight into. Dr. Browning, let's get back into topic a little bit here. And obviously, we'll take other calls as they're coming in. What, as you're dealing with a foot and ankle problem, let's talk with a patient who has a myofascial irritation, a fasciitis, if you will. You know, we touched upon it just a moment ago. And we're dealing with, you know, pain, very pain, painful area in the Achilles tendon and so forth. How is that treatable? Because so many people are going out for steroid injections and, you know, then the doctor says, well, that's too tight. We got to cut the Achilles tendon and all those crazy things that take place. What's your take on it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, these are very treatable. If it's something that's an on again, off again or chronic type thing, then I'm pretty sure that person has some mechanical problems in the ankle or maybe even in the hip that have to be stabilized unless they just want to deal with this ongoingly. Over pronation, the foot is too flat, will certainly cause that Achilles tendon to be under more stress and actually causes it to bow. So when we pull on the tendon too much, the tendon becomes inflamed. As it becomes inflamed, we lay down scar tissue, and you'll often see people get knots in there. And if it's in place for long periods of time, you'll actually see calcification. You'll get calcium deposits in the Achilles itself. The injections, the cortisones, and those types of things will reduce the inflammation. They certainly won't fix the mechanical problem that started it, though.
Let's go to the phones. Joan, thank you for calling. How can we help you?
Well, thank you. Right at the beginning of the program, you mentioned like when you wear your socks all day, and then if you have a depression, that could be circulation. And I wear these little, I call them like tennis socks or, you know, just little small like footy kind of things with a tennis shoe. And always at the end of the day, you know, when I take off my socks, I have a depression where that elastic was.
Yeah. So, hi, Jones, Dr. Browning. Yeah, that's what's called pitting edema. And what that typically means is Your body's having a hard time pushing the fluids back into the circulatory system to recirculate it. Some of the common reasons that happens is we're too sedentary. We don't move enough. There's too much constriction in the calf itself, so it actually physically pinches the lymphatic channels, and the lymphatic is more or less kind of the sub pump of the body. It pulls fluids back in there. And it can also be a side effect of an underlying cardiovascular issue we might not know we have, or even side effects of different medications.
What kind of socks or what do you recommend people wear?
Well, no, it's not that we're recommending a specific type of sock, but what I'm saying is that imprint that you're seeing from the sock itself is a sign that there might be an issue that should be looked at.
Okay.
Joan, let me ask you a question before you get off. Do you take any medications?
Yes, I do.
What do you take?
Lovastatin.
Okay. So one of the side effects of the drug that you're taking is the depletion of something called coenzyme Q10, CoQ10,
yes,
which leads to cardiac failure over time.
And yes, if you're taking it, Dr. Roselle, I do take 200 milligrams a day
of CoQ10.
Yes.
All right. That may or may not be enough. Depends on the type and whether you're absorbing it or not. And there's other pieces to that. But with any statin, here's an interesting thing. Go to there's an interesting article that was produced, actually two of them. One that was released about 3-4 years ago, and it was published in the New England Journal of Medicine, and it talked about the actual effect of any kind of statin on the cardiovascular system. You can look it up. It's there. And they did a study of this one was for men, and it was over 1,000 people. But they also did other studies that have going back over 15 to 16 years, and many of them were on women. Last August, the FDA released a report. They basically had to do 180 turn on the recommendation for aspirin. Aspirin also decreases CoQ10 throughout the entire body, not only in the heart, but the brain and other places. And they said that people who were on aspirin or aspirin-type substances had the worst cardiovascular outcome, period. And you can look that up for yourself. Just go, you know.
I do take that 81 milligrams of aspirin a day.
Yep. So in my opinion, go read the articles. It's not okay. You're hurting your body dramatically. And unfortunately, way too many people are being put on statins, our opinion, because, you know, it's just standard of care without asking the question why. And, you know, when I was in school years ago, normal cholesterol level was 225 or less. Normal LDL levels, which are supposed to be the bad cholesterol, it's actually a protein, a lipoprotein, was 135 or less, 130 or less. And, you know, you needed to be above 50 for a female for HDL and above 45 for a male for HDL. Now, the thing of it is, those really don't tell you anything because you don't have any of the subfractions that break them down into the more specific components. We call that a VAP test, and all of a sudden there was a big push by drug companies and so forth to get rid of the VAP. There's a couple companies that do that in the subfractionated areas. However, my opinion is that you need to really do your research and to get to somebody who can advise you properly on these. There's a whole lot more that I could ask you, but you need to really look at this in detail. Joan, take that, look it up. If we can help you in any way, please get a hold of us, and we'll be more than happy to, you know, to guide you. 888-630-9625. Bill from Manassas, how can we help you, sir?
Hi. I just my doctor just recently recommended that I go on a ketogenic diet, and I just kind of wanted you to weigh in on it.
Hey, Bill, was there a specific recommendation on the amount of grams of carbohydrates per day, or was there a framework in which he put you on to call this a ketogenic diet?
Carbs would be approximately 50 or less a day.
Okay, so this is, for lack of a better description, a tried and true diet that's been around since Dr. Atkins started it, and, you know, back in the 40s and 50s. The idea is when the body goes into ketosis, we burn an alternative fuel source, being fat, as opposed to using our primary fuel source, which is glycogen. So what happens is we burn this fat, we change the way the machinery runs. It can be effective at quick weight loss. The concern becomes some of the side effects that are evolve with it. You become acidic. And my personal concern is, how easy is the person going to be able to transition back to a more normal diet afterwards? And I just see people yo-yo. Now, I will say this. I do like the concepts of paleo diet, which is kind of ketogenic. It's very restrictive on grains and sugars and starches and more of your vegetables and meat. So I think there's a happy medium in there.
There is. And my opinion is very parallel to what Dr. Browning just told you in simply this. If you cut your carbohydrate levels way too low, you're not going to get the other nutrient bases that you have to have for good health. And ultimately, as Dr. Browning said, and here's the thing that we all have to remember, is the inflammatory levels get way too high in the body, and inflammation is acid, and acid will begin to degenerate. There's ways of sparking the system and getting the body to work, but you need high levels of minerals. That comes from your vegetables, anything that is colorful. You know, getting rid of the grains is one thing. I eat very few grains, occasionally here and there, but you've got to make sure that you're well balanced and getting all the nutrient bases. With Atkins' old diet, where it was only meat and they took everything away from you, they saw people with a lot of damage to their body, and that's all of a sudden they started shifting. Well, if we give them these nutrients and these supplements, and then they started adding some vegetables back in, that's the way you have to do it. Bill, our office, you know, Sue and Mary Jane can guide you very specifically and get you on track. If there's anything that we can do to help you, give a call, make an appointment, and we'll see what we can do to make that happen. You know, Dr. Browning, we hear that all the time. It's like, you know, just only eat proteins, only eat meats, get rid of the carbohydrates. And, you know, when you drop your carbohydrate count down to 50 grams a day long term, there's significant amount of damage that can be done.
I mean, there certainly can be. Your diet becomes pretty darn restricted if you're down to 50 grams of carbs. That's, you know, that's pretty close to one slice of bread. So carbs.
And nothing else.
And nothing else. You know, carbohydrates can be good in moderation. I'm not much as zealot as you would be on that side. But I think if a person can incorporate more of the vegetables than the meats, then we'd be in better place. Now, when we think about the original way that the Atkins diet was set up, I have the book at home. I'll have to knock the dust off it. He was talking about using mayonnaise like it's going out of style,
right?
And
yep.
Cheese and,
yep.
You know, which is probably tasty for 2 days. And then it's, I mean,
fats and proteins.
Yeah,
and that was it.
Yeah. It's probably pretty bad.
Not a good. We're coming up to a break. I'm going to take a real quick one and then we may hold her over. There's tons of you calling. You're supposed to do this early in the program. Natasha, how can we help you?
Hi, good afternoon. You mentioned earlier about having adhesions in your foot because I have a flat foot that occurred as a result of running track in high school. And so I want to know if those, can you restore that functionality in the arch back
okay.
of the foot?
So, Natasha, hang on. We got to come up to the break. I don't hang up. I'm going to take your call as soon as we come back, and we're going to talk about those flat feet and, you know, what you did and how they can be fixed, because they most certainly can be fixed. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Tom Rozelle here. Listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live in studio. My guest, Dr. Harlan Brown, and your presenter this Wednesday evening, 7 p.m. at the Rozelle Center for Healing, talking about all those things that affect your ankle and your foot, whether metabolic or whether they're straight up structural. We're here every Sunday, same time, same old place, 12 noon on the Eastern Seaboard. You know where you're listening from, so do the math. You can figure it out. Some of you on the West Coast, some of you in the middle of the country. Love to have you listening in, and we try to answer your questions as quickly as we possibly can. Let's go back to the phones. There's so many of you hanging in there at this point. Natasha, so you have flat feet, and you did it, you know, because you're an athlete, and you want to know if they're reversible. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay, Dr. Browning.
Hi, Natasha. Reversible in the sense that you have pain, without a doubt, that can be addressed. I don't think the issue with people who are having flat feet is to make their arch come back as much as it is to make their arch more functional for them. That can be done therapeutically by addressing weakness patterns in the muscles and certainly the fascia itself. Or you might even consider a semi-rigid orthotic to help coax the arch up. You don't want a hard, fixed orthotic because it just basically props it up. You want something in between that allows the foot to actually pronate, because pronation is good. That's a normal function of the foot. We go from supination to pronation. It's when we become overpronated that things become bad. So I think a lot of folks think that they need to fix the flat foot, meaning they need to restore the arch. That typically doesn't happen. It's more or less stabilizing the arch.
It's a matter of functionality.
Right.
As long as the muscles are firing properly and the wrap around the foot that we talked about, the fascia is intact and you're not in pain, but you have normal mechanical optimization for your body, for your foot, that's what's important. And when we're dealing with athletes, whether they're professional athletes or the weekend warriors like so many of us, that's what we strive for, to get that to work. Does that make sense to you?
It does. And where does Dr. Browning practice?
He practices at the Rizal Center in Fairfax, off National Capital Beltway. So we're real quick for a lot of folks, literally one-third to a half a mile from the exit on Route 50, and that's where the class is this Wednesday evening. Join us. World of information. You'll get a lot of feedback. Natasha, really appreciate your phone call. Tim, got a couple minutes. How can we help you, sir? Tim.
Hello. Yes, sir.
How can we help you? We've got to make it quick.
Yes. Okay. I'm overweight. I've had gout. I've also but my feet have always turned out. When I was a kid, they put some special things on my feet, like orthotics. But now I'm like 45, and my feet are turning again.
Yeah, so Tim, if your feet turn out, that's probably because there's just too much tightness in the hip muscles itself. The obvious thing to start with would be to drop some weight. Number one, that's going to take a lot of the stress off your foot. Number two, it's going to greatly help the gout situation. And as I said earlier on in the show, repetitive bouts of gout will damage the joint over time. So a heavy purine diet, lots of meats and things like that, alcohols, fried foods will cause gout. So you want to kind of go in reverse and implement more vegetables and just drink water and stay away from the preservatives and inflammatory things.
Dr. Browning, I have one for you. One of my patients said, every time that I have a piece of chocolate, I get gout. I get a flare-up. My toe throbs. And I sat there and I went through the whole thing, and the only thing I can remember was the metabolic process that is affected in the liver, and just by deficit backs its system up and because of the inflammatory reaction.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know if one piece of chocolate will do. Maybe there's some sort of psychological thing going on there.
Maybe. I don't know. Because I sat through and I thought about that and thought about it, and I said, wait a minute, there's nothing I really understand about this unless they're simply allergic to it and it's causing more of a backup within the liver.
Yeah, that sounds more likely.
And then purine metabolism, isn't working the way it's supposed to. We're coming up to the end of the program, and we're leaving a whole bunch of you on the line. I'm so sorry. I wish we could make this 3 hours long. We'll be right back next week, same time, same place. Bye.